And I'll say, don't give up. It's a bumpy ride. It's an extremely bumpy ride, but don't give up. Like, just hang in there. Find the right partner that's going to back you. You want somebody that's going to be at your side the entire time. And that's the difference between having a company that's like successful in the end versus a company that's not. You don't want folks that are going to run for the hills when the ground starts shifting.
This is Mission to Scale, a podcast that reveals the tools, mindsets, and strategies that organizations and funders need to maximize their impact. Because the world's biggest problems need solutions at scale. I'm your host, Dan Beredovitz, founder of Spring Impact. Receiving financial support is probably the biggest hurdle faced by organizations looking to scale. As a nonprofit, you might be constantly battling to receive grants. As a social enterprise, it can prove difficult to raise funding and meet the expectations of investors. But finding the right organization to back your company financially might be the key to scaling impact. In today's episode, we're exploring the potential of social impact investment to achieve scale. Our guest is Andre Benin, managing partner at Rethink Education, an impact investment firm focused on backing education technology companies. In our conversation, Andre, better known as Dre, shares how he balances financial returns and social impact when deciding whether to invest in a company. We also talk about the differences between funding nonprofits and social enterprises and discuss why social enterprises tend to scale more quickly. On the show, Dre also provides insightful advice to social entrepreneurs looking to scale their business. Andre, great to have you on the show. And in fact, Dre, everyone calls you Dre.
Everyone calls me Dre.
Is there anyone who calls you Andre, or are you just Dre?
Well, I'll be honest, when I'm in trouble sometimes, my mom will call me Andre, but most of the time everyone calls me Dre, and that's been my nickname for a while. So, okay, yeah.
So every time I speak to you, I don't want you to think that I am your mother. So I think let's do Dre. I know you were born in Côte d'Ivoire to Ghanaian parents, but you grew up in the US in Virginia, I believe. Could you tell us a bit about your experiences as a first-gen immigrant here and maybe how they've shaped some of the work you're doing today?
Happy to. So in terms of my upbringing, I spent the formative years of my life in Côte d'Ivoire, as you mentioned. Both my parents were Ghanaian. Back in the early 90s, my mom and father decided to go separate ways, which precipitated my mom immigrating to a new country. For her, it was one of those things where she did her own scan of the global landscape and looking for where her two sons could find the best education. And that's what prompted the move to the U.S. So coming to the U.S., I'd been in the French education system for a very long time. So English was essentially a second language to me. I had to get up to speed on the English language, which I feel very lucky I was able to do. But in terms of education, and why education has been so prominent and important in my life, it all stems from my mother. The most important thing for her was to see her two kids receive the best education, whether it be graduating from undergrad and pursuing and attaining the highest degree of education that they could. And I feel very grateful that both my older brother and myself were able to graduate from undergrad, the first in our immediate family, and then go on to earn graduate degrees. Both of us received our law degree. And it was interesting because seeing how education for us, when I say us, like my brother and I, we saw how education was able to unlock a different ecosystem to us and different opportunities. And as I think about education as a whole, I see it as a way for folks that are economically disadvantaged to be able to gain access to greater and better opportunities.
Dre worked in public policy before getting involved in impact investment. In 2018, he joined Strada Education Network as their managing director. Strada is a non-profit corporation which assists students into post-secondary education by providing financial support and other help.
A lot of the conversation, like when we started at Strada, was around how do we create more access in education? Like, how do we get more learners into a path to obtaining a degree? Then the conversation changed from like, right, access to success. And then our theme at Strada was completion with a purpose. So for us, like the thinking was, all right, it's not enough for a learner to gain access to college or some sort of degree or credential. It's important for them to be able to succeed in that degree, but most importantly, be able to transition successfully to the workforce.
In February this year, Dre joined Rethink Education. Rethink Education invests in early and growth stage companies that are developing technological solutions to learning.
I was an investor in Rethink. Like, I invested in their fund twice when I was at Strada. And of all the fund managers that I invested in, bias aside, I'll say they were, and they still are, the most thoughtful investors in the space. There are a lot of folks that talk the talk when it comes to impact. Not a lot of folks that walk in the walk. And I feel like my position and view on Rethink is like they've been able to walk the walk from the team level and how they're creating impact at the team level to the underlying portfolio companies that the team is investing in to the populations that are served within the portfolio companies.
I'd love to hear some more about that. I've been speaking to a bunch of impact investors recently to try and understand the space and how they look at capital from pure investment for return all the way through for grant. Mm-hmm. And there is pretty much universal agreement that most of this impact investment space is just not delivering on the promises of creating real impact. So how do you think about return on capital versus impact? Because there's a massive tension there, yeah. Prioritizing one versus the other. The first question, I guess, is what do you do with your fund? Do you aim for like market rate plus returns on investment? Or is there any concession that you make if you see something that has a huge amount of impact?
I think there's a balanced approach in terms of how you invest, how you put capital to work, having an impact lens. And I don't think that we're concessionary on the returns, but we're still able to achieve the returns even with our impact approach. We're not just looking at companies just to like return capital to our LPs. Like, we're looking at companies with a dual lens, one on the return side, but also on the impact side. And I still believe we've been able to do this pretty well, given the companies that we've invested in at Rethink Education.
When deciding whether to invest in an organization, Dre balances commercial returns and social impact.
Rethink is very thoughtful in their approach. So people, in terms of like the founder, how much experience have they had in building a business before? The product is important. And within the product component, like, how is it impacting the most vulnerable or economically disadvantaged or underrepresented population? And then impact could also stand alone just because like different businesses have like different business models. So like you use like different impact metrics to identify whether or not to invest in the business or not. And then lastly, I'll say like the profit piece, which is more on the financials. Like, is this a product that can actually scale from a revenue standpoint? Like, could it get to like 20 something million, 50 something million, or go even higher than that? Like, those are some of the criteria that we use when we're looking at a company. On the revenue side, like, we've looked at companies that are earlier than seed stage. They're few and far between in our portfolio, but some of those companies have about, like, some have no revenue or they have close to like a few hundreds of thousands of ARR.
ARR stands for annual recurring revenue.
Where we're most comfortable is companies that have a 500 million plus in ARR. And then we can see that path to 20s or 50s in terms of million in ARR.
Hey, Mission to Scale listeners, I need a favor. If the show has helped you in any way, can you share this episode with a friend or colleague? Maybe it's someone who likes listening to good podcasts in their downtime or on their way to work. All you have to do is copy the link in this episode and send it over with a, "Hey, you might want to check out Mission to Scale." To keep providing the show, we need to build our audience. And if you haven't yet, please subscribe where you listen to your podcasts. Appreciate you for helping spread the word. And thank you for being part of the Mission to Scale community. Now back to the show. Rethink has turned down companies that look promising in terms of financial returns, but did not have great impact.
The company is an online learning platform, and it provides resources to help students feel confident. But when we looked at the company a few years back and we looked under the hood, and one thing that we uncovered was it was facilitating cheating. Now, when we uncovered that, like, we ended up passing on the company, it turned out that the company was still successful. In fact, was able to reach a favorable outcome years after that. But for us, like, we didn't want to invest in a company that was facilitating cheating. Another one was a company that was also growing quite rapidly, and we turned down because we didn't see the impact that it was creating. And in fact, it was charging students and parents, which is something that's outside of what we believe in from an impact standpoint. We don't believe that students should bear the brunt of the cost. We'd rather see B2B models or enterprise models where companies are charging other companies or districts or institutions or so on and so forth.
Could you give an example of a business in your portfolio that you particularly think is doing great things in the impact space and, you know, of course, will generate a return as well?
Yeah, so one that comes to mind very quickly is it's a company called SV Academy. I had the opportunity to invest in them when I was at Strata. Rethink has invested in them. In fact, they invested in, like, at their seed stage, and also invested in the company in my previous fund as well. And the company was a training platform for tech sales. And they've been very methodical in terms of the folks that they train. And from an economic mobility standpoint, the learners that go, that enter the program and graduate from the program, they see a significant increase in their salary post program. And these are folks that were sitting at entry level jobs or even lower paying jobs than before. From an impact standpoint as well, like, over 60% of the learners at SV Academy are from underrepresented backgrounds, which is quite powerful. So the founder, he comes from an underrepresented background. That's one piece. The second piece is the learners that they're serving are from underrepresented background as well. And then the last piece is, like, just thinking through how the company has been able to scale and the market opportunity for that business is also phenomenal. So if you're familiar with the education landscape, there are a lot of tech, software engineering, UX design platforms in the market, but that, when you look at adjacent markets, there are not a lot of companies that are serving those markets. So, like, tech sales, like, data science training, et cetera. So just looking at the fact that they're in the market that's not necessarily crowded, it's another positive.
97% of SB Academy graduates had no tech background before joining the program, and 70% of them are first-generation college graduates.
If you're looking at impact, that's huge for these learners that are going through the programs. And then the last piece is the market opportunity, which they've been able to do fairly well. Again, and that also goes back to the founder and his ability to operate a business, were some of the things that stood out as I looked at SV Academy as a potential investment.
So with something like SV Academy, I mean, it sounds like they're doing, you know, work which I've seen many nonprofits do. What's the benefit of them being a business versus a nonprofit?
Great question. I think the scalability is a bit slower on a not-for-profit side. It's just a different, Strata was a not-for-profit. It's a different mentality and a different way of operating. And sometimes with not-for-profits, the scale mentality is not there. You're relying on grants, and sometimes it at times detracts from a founder's ability to really operate a business. Whereas on the for-profit side, you're looking to operate and create scale. And in order to do that, sometimes it requires capital. And that's where venture capitalists or investors come in, and they're able to leverage those dollars to help companies scale.
I think that's right. From my experience, not-for-profits can go so far, and many have achieved scale depending on the financial model. But ultimately, if you want to really help thousands, hundreds of thousands of people, if you have something where there is the potential to generate revenue and returns, even if they're lower than market rate returns, you suddenly have access to these huge pools of capital, and you're able to get them in a different and much easier way. I mean, in the not-for-profit space, we talk about unrestricted funding. Yep. Well, funding of investment is unrestricted.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're considering turning your nonprofit into a social enterprise, Dre has advice for you.
I think a company or a founder can stay true to mission, regardless of being not-for-profit or for-profit. And I think the difference between for-profit and not-for-profit would be the scalability of the business. I think you got to just consider your options. Do you feel like you can accomplish scale, a decent enough scale as a not-for-profit? If you feel like you can accomplish scale as a not-for-profit, then I'll say go the not-for-profit route. But if you want to achieve scale quickly and larger scale, I'll say taking that capital from a venture capitalist.
As an entrepreneur, what's the different mindset that you need in nonprofit versus taking money from a VC? Once you're on the track of getting VC funding, they want returns. And so that comes with a great deal of pressure.
It truly does, but it also depends on the VC. It also depends on, it's just like anything, you need to choose the right partner to be at your side as you progress on your journey. There's some VCs that are just going to push scale, and we look to have you push the pedal to the floor. But there are some VCs that can still help you as a founder achieve scale without having you push that pedal to the metal.
I've seen many sort of, I think failed attempts is the only way to put it, failed attempts of nonprofit folk trying to get into doing commercial work. And typically they fall down because you've got to just focus on your bottom line. The finance is so critical, every last penny needs to be accounted for. And, you have to be able to sort of innovate more quickly and do things that are more challenging in nonprofits. On the flip side, it's got to be productized in the commercial sector. And if you're talking about systems, policy change, things like that, those are just typically things which commercial entities just cannot engage with at the same level either. Has that been your experience as well?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely has. So when I was at Strata, we acquired both for-profit and not-for-profit businesses. So, and sometimes in certain cases, we acquired for-profit businesses and converted them to not-for-profit. And that was more from a mission standpoint. There are different needs at Strata that required us to convert those businesses from for-profit to not-for-profits. But if you were to put the for-profits side by side with the not-for-profit, I'll say the for-profit businesses, they were scaling, and it was, given the fact that they were mission aligned, they were still scaling a bit quicker than the not-for-profit ones.
I asked Dre about some of the challenges that may occur when a founder or CEO from a social enterprise receives money from venture capital.
We like backing founders that are also coachable. There are some founders that don't necessarily want to take advice from VCs, and they overpromise and underdeliver. And even in the case where there's fraud involved, it's unavoidable that a VC would want to switch management as a result of it. And that's part of, again, it's a sad part of the business, but sometimes it is also necessary. It goes without saying that founders need to have some sort of humility and recognize be very self-aware that, all right, I can take this company from zero to one milestone, but in order for me to get to the next milestone, I need to take a step back.
What advice would you give to a leader, a founder, or a CEO looking to scale up?
Like what I've seen in successful companies that I feel lucky to have exited, there are certain founders that put all their eggs in the product side. They're always working on refining the product, but not really selling the product. And there are founders that are just selling without really having a product to deliver. I think it needs to be a balanced approach where you're refining the product as you're selling the product, because like you're receiving feedback from customers and you're able to refine the product, but never stop selling the product, but sell the product as you're refining it. I think it's the best thing to do. And don't give up. It's a bumpy ride. It's an extremely bumpy ride, but don't give up. Like just hang in there, find the right partner that's going to back you. And that's not going to run for the hills. Like once the ground shifts underneath the company, you want somebody that's going to be at your side the entire time. And that's the difference between having a company that's like successful in the end versus a company that's not.
I hope today's conversation has helped you gain a better understanding of impact investment and how your organization might benefit from it. I love Dre's last point around balancing sales with product. It was a hard lesson to learn throughout my career, so I encourage you to keep it in mind as you look to scale. That's it for today's episode. Please don't forget to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss out on any of our episodes. And while you're there, I'd appreciate it if you could rate and give us a review. If you love Mission to Scale, I hope you recommend our show to a friend or colleague. Thanks so much for joining us, and I'll catch you all in the next episode. If you've enjoyed this episode of Mission to Scale, check out Upstarts, a new podcast series by The Conduit. A home for people passionate about positive impact. Upstarts focuses on the stories of a diverse range of impact entrepreneurs spanning industries, interests, and influence. The series gets to the heart of the journey of an impact entrepreneur, looking into how they built their companies, what problems they're trying to fix, their impact so far, and their hopes for the future. What can we learn and action from their experience? Thank you to our media partner, Alliance Magazine. If you'd like to stay connected with the latest news in global philanthropy, Mission to Scale listeners can get a 50% off your first subscription by using the code SPRINGIMPACT at checkout. Visit alliancemagazine.org to find out more. Mission to Scale is produced by Spring Impact and Human Group Media. If you want to learn more about our work at Spring Impact, visit springimpact.org and follow us at Spring Impact on Twitter.